People sometimes ask me if I became the Ron Van Dam Show announcer because I love what Ron does and I love his comedy. Well, no. It's because Ron broke me out of a Tijuana prison back in 82 and smuggled me across the border in a suitcase in the trunk of a Yugo. And I still owe him for that. Muchas gracias, mi amigo. You're listening to the Ron Van Dam Show on New England Broadcasting.
Good morning, good afternoon, good evening, good night. It's the Ron Van Dam Show.
Whatever.
Hold on tight, things can get a bit weird, if you like that sort of thing.
Hey, welcome to the program. It is the Ron Van Dam Show. I can prove it. My name's in the title. What more do you want from me? So make yourself comfortable. I'll be entertaining you and informing things about the things to you for the next half hour. Then you're free to go do what you were going to do that you didn't want to do anyway, apparently. All right, make yourself comfortable. This won't take long. All right. My favorite phrase still, a phrase that annoys other people, and the phrase is whatever. I don't actually say it to people. I say it in my mind. But that's good enough for me. Yeah. When someone's talking incessantly about themselves and I don't care at all, I should say whatever, but I don't. I just say it to myself and I let you just ramble on. But believe me, I don't care what you're saying. And anybody who starts talking to you and says, well, let me make a long story short, you know it's going to be long. They have no ability to make anything short. So you're pack a picnic lunch, you're in for a ride. I wish I could say, you know, before you tell me your short story that's really actually long and you're trying to make it short, before you do that, I don't care. I don't care. If you're doing this to hear yourself talk, then by all means, go forth. But I won't be listening. If you find at the end of your story that I'm not in the room anymore, I'm telling you ahead of time, it's a whatever kind of thing. But you can't be honest. In this society, you cannot be honest. You'll be chastised, removed, canceled. You can't say what's on your mind. And if you do, you have to do it in a very confusing manner to the point where they don't know what you actually said. So you've gotten your message out, but they didn't quite get it. Don't, you know, you can't influence people. I know on YouTube they have influencers. I don't know what that is. I'm not into it. I'm not a YouTuber. I guess you take the name of the product and you put an ER at the end and you become one of it. I'm not a YouTuber. I'm not an influencer, I guess. I mean, maybe because I do radio, I'm an influencer. I really don't understand, but I never wanted to influence anybody to do something. You make up your own decision. You get the information. You make up your own mind. I don't understand what the influence stuff is. I guess they review products and they influence you to get the product or not. Isn't that called marketing? Hello? Where have you been all this time? You're just doing the same thing. You're just calling it something different is all you're doing. I sound angry today, but I'm really not. I'm doing a radio show, as I have been for 30 years, and I've learned that if you just talk normally about plants, no one's going to listen unless they're into plants, and that's not a lot of people. It's not a lot of people. So you have to be animated and dramatic. Am I really animated and dramatic? No. No. Not even close. So am I theatrical? Yes, I'm a thespian. Okay, fine. I admit it. Okay, let's move on here. I did a television program yesterday, which is the visual version of this. And in that show, I started explaining something, and it gathered a group of people who stopped what they were doing and started to listen, and I thought, oh, okay, this must be interesting then. So I bring it forth upon you today, as Shakespeare would say. You know, people are complaining about the high price of stuff. High price of food at the supermarket, high price of rentals, mortgages, the whole bit. And I tell you that this is not a result of government. We tend to blame government for everything. We're in a I didn't do anything wrong, blame them kind of thing, similar to Trump's mode of operation. You never do anything wrong, it's the other people. Well, in this case, the high prices, it's not really government that's done anything wrong or really can do anything or really should do anything. It's the companies. Let's start putting blame where blame really is, which is the obvious point, and that is the high prices are charged by the companies. The government doesn't say that. The companies do. Companies only exist to make money. Let's get down to brass tacks and stop kidding ourselves. Companies are not here to save humanity, to make your life better. We have a product that makes your life better. Okay, sure. And we're giving it to you for this price because we want to make a lot of money. That's their only mode. That's it. There's nothing else. Some companies will say, well, you know, we care about the environment. Oh, okay. Then you're good people. But it costs you a lot of money to care about the environment. You know, they only care about that. They have to pay their employees. And, you know, like let's take a company like Coca-Cola, not the other Coke. Coca-Cola. They have to bottle their product. Bottles go up in price. The bottle manufacturers that make the bottles, they charge more to Coca-Cola. Now Coca-Cola has to pass that on to you. That's where it comes from. It's the companies doing this. They want to make more money, but that's why they're there. They weren't created by a deity to exist for social purposes. They're there to make money. And in doing so, you have to pay for the product if you want it, and you're going to have to pay more and more and more and more and more every time because costs go up. Shipping costs go up. Everything goes up, and it's figured into the price of the product that you pay on the supermarket shelf or wherever you're buying your stuff. So, all right, now do we put blame on them? Well, yeah, directly, sure. And I'll tell you why. There's a way out of this. And I feel like Jesus marching people through the desert. Did Jesus do that or was it Moses? I get confused between the two because they both wore sandals. I don't know which is which. I mean, I'm sure they were different people, but I think they kind of did the same stuff. I'm not sure. I'm not a historian. I was not great at history. And I wasn't there. Some people think I was, but I wasn't. I'm not that old. Anyway, here's the answer. If there was one company, it could be Coca-Cola. It could be anybody. It could be the Campbell's Soup Company. I don't know. If they just announced publicly on television commercials, in the news, whatever the case may be, we are lowering our prices. With all the high prices of everything today, we, the Campbell's Soup Company, are lowering our prices immediately. Did you hear the news, Betty? Joe, did you hear the news? They're lowering the prices on soup. And if Campbell starts lowering the price on soup, so are the other soup companies going to start lowering their prices too in order to be competitive. Why? Because all of a sudden, everybody's going to start buying Campbell's soup. And I mean everybody. Even if they don't like soup. Because that company announced their prices are going down. It's true. Now, if Coca-Cola said the same thing, we at the Coca-Cola people, we have decided to lower our prices because we care about you. And prices are getting too high. Officially, starting next week, we're lowering the price of our Coca-Cola bottles and cans and whatever. We're lowering them by 20%.
Did you hear that?
Next day, go to the supermarket. There's no Coca-Cola on the shelf because they've been bought out. They have been, the volume of sales has gone through the roof. Now, I went to school and I took an economics class. I think I had to. I don't remember. And in the economics class, they said that volume, if you sell a lot of something, your profits will go up through the roof because you've moved so much product. Everybody's buying your product now in unbelievable quantities. Are you losing money? No, you're making money. But Ron, it costs more for the bottles.
Yeah, but look at all the money they're making.
And when one company does that, the other companies do that as well. And all it takes is a company to have, excuse the expression, balls to lower their price. And it doesn't have to be drastically, just even a little bit, but announce it and say, we are going to be the first. No more of these high prices. We're lowering the prices of our products. I swear everybody's going to buy it. You won't. They'll be like gold. Also a great way for someone to try a new product. They make it really low in price so that you'll try it and buy it, but you have to announce that. And that starts the ball rolling. And then new innovations and ways of bottling things and boxing things and all that start going down because they got to move their product too. It's a chain reaction. Everything in life is a chain reaction. And if it's something happens in one spot, it's going to happen in the spot next to that and the spot next to that and the spot next to that. And eventually it's all going to start going down a little bit. And that's all we need. The American public doesn't need things to be free or really cheap. They need things to just go down a little bit to show some type of unity in our situation. So I don't know how many people listen to this show. I think a lot, and I don't know if there's a company listening. You want to give it a shot? You want to lower your price, but make sure everybody knows about it. You got to market that. It might be worth it. Give it a try. And then I shall be your financial savior or your marketing savior, whatever. Follow me as I lead you through the desert of hell and lower your prices. Hey, I don't know. Whatever. I think companies can't afford to do this and take that shot, and I really hope that they do. So the blame, does not lie in government, really. They try to keep things fairly normal, but don't rely on government right now because we have things called presidents and Congress, and the two of them always butt heads, and even Congress themselves butts their own heads. Because we've got two sides with an aisle in the middle, and one side never reaches across to the other aisle like they used to. They'd rather see the other side fail at the expense of the American people. So don't rely on them. Start relying on you. You know, the public's everything. You vote, and things happen. You don't vote, and things happen the wrong way. And it's the same with everything. If you don't buy a product because you don't like their customer service or they're too expensive, if you don't buy that product, they're not going to do well. They're going to go out of business. Their volume will go down the crapper, and they will find it difficult to exist, and they'll have to lower their price eventually. It's all up to you. It's all up to you. If you don't buy the product, that product ain't around. And businesses are always there, as I said, to make money, and that's their only purpose in life. You know, for every dollar that you buy our socks, we give 50 cents to save the whales. Oh, do you? Oh, do you? Or is it a marketing ploy?
Well, it's a little bit of both.
Yeah, we're here to make money. We're not here to save the whales. We're here to make money. If you think that we're saving the whales and you buy more stuff accordingly, that's a marketing ploy. It's a win-win. We're saving the whales and you've got socks.
Oh, all right. I guess that's okay.
Now, if we weren't saving the whales, maybe we could bring the price down a little bit. But there wouldn't be so many whales. It's a problem. All right. I have an interesting guest coming up momentarily. But before I do that, we have a commercial break because someone's got to pay for this. And it's obviously not you so far. Obviously, it's not you. Where are you going to dinner? You know, there's a place right near your house. You don't have to go that far.
Looking to try somewhere new for dinner tonight? Come to that bar near your house with a new chef out on work release, ready to tempt your taste buds with delicious specials. Start off with deep-fried meat and cheese things, crispy on the outside and nearly warm on the inside, with a house-made dipping sauce that's almost certainly just mayonnaise and ketchup. How about a pepperoni pizza served hot and fresh out of the supermarket? Or the big quarter-pound hamburger cooked just the way you like it, as long as the way you like it is well done or inedibly raw? Order a local craft beer from a wide selection that includes IPAs, and of course, IPAs. And when you're ready for dessert, the bartender can point you to some place that actually does that kind of thing. Ready for dinner? Head to that bar near your house. Not too far to drive, just a little too far to walk. We'll see you there.
Matt Frey joins us now. He's authored a new book called This Is How Your Marriage Ends. It's a hopeful approach to saving relationships. I do a lot of interviews, Matt, and I'll tell you, every once in a while I say to myself, why am I even doing this? This book is like, this is why I do it. Because these are things that we all go through, or most of us do, and yet there are really no explanations, nowhere to turn for it. And here it is, this book. So congratulations on that.
Thank you very much for really, really kind words. Yeah. And that's exactly how I thought about it. I don't pretend that this book holds the key to all those like inexplicable things in our relationships, but I think it offers at least some subtle insights into things we're not paying attention to.
I mean, there's nobody that doesn't struggle through a relationship. And I use the word struggle because it's not easy. I mean, it's tough enough to get through your life, much less somebody else's. So it's a rough gig. What I found interesting is you're a marriage counselor. And I guess the question would be, how did this happen to you?
I was not. The divorce is what compelled me to really study and work on this and try to like solve the mystery. And then it was this sort of accidental discovery that none of us know what we're doing when we get into these relationships that made me want to, this is what I decided I wanted to do with my life. Yeah. Once I realized so many people were sort of like set up to fail in their relationships, I thought that was a real tragic scenario.
Very interesting. I met a guy once who was, he's a comedian, and he had just gotten divorced for the second time, and he looked at me and he said, you know, I'm just not good at this. And I thought, wow, okay, that's just like very plain and simple. And he just realizes he's not good at this stuff. That's pretty cool.
Thank you.
Yeah.
I was not good at relationship skills. I believe very strongly that study and practice are what you need to do to get good at anything.
Yeah.
And I don't believe study and practice are ways that the average person, and if I'm going to pick on us, the average guy, thinks about like the relationships, that it requires some level of relational skills. I didn't know how to think about it that way.
Yeah.
I thought it was all about how good or bad I was as a human being. And I think that's a dangerous metric.
Is marriage a different kind of relationship than all others? In other words, we all have friendships. Sometimes they work, sometimes they don't. We have relationships with relatives. A lot of those don't work out. Is a marriage relationship like a whole different ball game?
I think it's unique, and I wish I could explain like some sort of science based or data based like argument for this. But the truth is, I think most of us have successful relationships, at least with friends and coworkers and family. Mm-hmm. And so all around us, we're getting along with everyone just fine.
Right.
And the one person that seems to have the most complaints about us is our relationship partner.
Yeah.
And it's really easy to write them off as the statistical outlier when they're the only ones, quote unquote, complaining about us.
Yeah.
And to me, that's the real danger, is that these subtle things that destroy our relationships, our intimate romantic relationships, yeah, those identical behaviors don't necessarily destroy relationships with our parents, with our siblings, with our coworkers, with our friends.
Yeah.
And to me, that's the danger, is how it's disguised as harmless disagreement that doesn't matter anywhere else, mm-hmm, but it very much matters when you share homes,
yes,
and resources and children.
Yeah.
It just does. And again, that's the part of it where it's like, people might say, well, why? Why can't our relationship partners give us the same benefit of the doubt everyone else does? And I don't have a good answer for that. I just believe in data. The data, to me, suggests that we can get away with this stuff in all our relationships,
yeah,
but it will absolutely erode trust to the point where we don't get to have a relationship anymore with the person that we've promised to love and honor all the days of our lives.
Very interesting. What I appreciate here is that even though a relationship and marriage does not work out, doesn't make you a bad person, unless you're abusive, of course. I mean, there are certainly, but I mean, as a normal course, that doesn't mean you're a bad person. You can be a great person.
That's right. The way that I talk about it in the book is I hold my grandmother up to hyperbolic esteem, mm, and suggest that she has the most impeccable character on planet Earth, and that anyone who suggests otherwise is a dirty liar, or maybe someone who just hasn't met her. Yeah. But then I point out that I wouldn't want my grandma to be building like high-rise buildings in New York City,
yeah,
or piloting, true, you know, an F1 race car,
true,
or trying to repair my watch. She doesn't know how to do those things. They're not relevant to how decent of a human she is. And that same way, I'm like a decent guy. Yeah. You don't want me like being your civil engineer building your bridges.
Yeah.
That will fall down if I'm contracted to do that. So I have to learn how to build a bridge to be a good bridge builder. I have, yeah, to learn how to be a quality relationship partner in order to actually be one. And the two are not connected, character.
Yeah. Well, I mean, the bottom line is the person you live with is going to be on your ass 24/7, whether you like it or not. And sometimes it'll be ingratiating. Sometimes it won't. Is marriage successful only if you understand that it's a matter of being tolerant? Because that's going to come up all the time. And whether you can weather the tolerance is how successful marriage is. Does that make any sense?
Yeah, no, it really does. But I mean, I think there's sort of a nuanced response to that. And mm-hmm, that's, do we demonstrate the requisite amount of like respect,
yeah,
and care?
Yeah.
Do they trust us? I think a person will tolerate a lot of frustrating things,
mm-hmm,
if at their core they believe us to have their back, to that we're going to show up for them day after day, year after year.
Mm-hmm.
And the problem with these really, really little nuanced things that we do in our relationships,
yeah,
that erode trust is they communicate to somebody else that even if we think we're a good person, we're not going to show up for them 5 years, 10 years, 15 years from now. And when they come to that conclusion, they start to think about exiting the relationship. And I understand that today in a way I didn't when I was napalming my marriage.
Mm. But I mean, it's a two-way street. I mean, sometimes you can be thrown out of a marriage because the other person, for some reason, just can't tolerate that either. And you've done absolutely nothing weird or wrong. You wrote a post in January 2016 called "She Divorced,
yes,
Me Because I Left the Dishes by the Sink." That's kind of like, I was kind of smart. I mean, it was like, okay, it's a little title, but says everything.
Yeah, I think, you know, a lot of people take that ultra literally,
mm,
and they come back and they say, oh, she's a really petty person like that. You have to let go of the small stuff. And
yeah,
I wish that they would think a little bit deeper about what this means and think more. I mean, it's,
yeah,
it's not just dishes or laundry,
no,
or
no,
equality in terms of childcare. It's,
mm-hmm,
it's symbolic of, if something mattered to her,
mm-hmm,
but it didn't matter to me,
mm-hmm,
I frequently treated the things she cared about as if they didn't matter, because,
yeah,
they didn't matter to me. And you will lose the trust of someone in a marriage,
yeah,
or in a close-knit, cohabitating romantic relationship in which you don't value that which they value. If they can't trust you with,
yeah,
the stuff that matters most to them,
yeah,
you're not going to have a quality relationship with them. And everybody gets to have a debate about whether they think that's fair or not. I just think that's, as a matter of fact, how it's going to work out.
You know, I grew up in a generation where you lived with the other person for quite a long period of time before you got married. And it was frowned upon back then, because the previous generation, they didn't do that. And I thought that would solve,
yes,
everything. If you can live with somebody, you've gone over the hurdle of what it would be like. But that didn't seem to make a difference, did it?
I don't have data in the book on that, mm-hmm. but the data that I've read suggests that when you cohabitate, it correlates with divorce at a higher rate than people who waited.
Really?
And I don't know how to explain. And forgive me, I probably shouldn't be saying things that I can't back up on this conversation.
No, it's an opinion. It's an opinion. I mean, you went through it, and it's opinion, and yeah, it's valid.
I believe there's a correlation between the two, but I don't necessarily agree with it. It's probably not causality.
Yeah.
You know, it's probably circumstantial.
Yeah. There's just so many reasons. Some people damage their relationships because they want to be on the defense instead of the offense, and they turn it around. We come in with so much baggage into these life-sharing situations. It's amazing that any of them work out. We do have data that most of the marriages do fail.
Yes. Yes, there's a gentleman named Tai Tashiro who says that 7 out of 10 marriages fail.
Yeah.
And what that accounts for is all of the marriages that legally end in divorce,
yeah.
and then the percentage that are still together but miserable,
mm-hmm.
where one partner or both partners don't actually want to be married.
Yeah.
And I think we can maybe, it's semantically agreed that that's not a successful relationship. And when you think about the fact that marriage is a voluntary activity,
mm-hmm.
and statistically approximately 7 out of 10 unpleasant and or literally failing,
yeah.
it just speaks volumes, I think, about the lack of knowledge and skill that we enter marriage or long-term romantic relationships with.
Yeah.
It sets us up to fail, and I think it's really dangerous for everybody because we don't know that 10 years later, 5 years later, 15 years later, it's going to hurt as bad as it can for a lot of people.
Yeah. Let me ask your opinion on something. Those that get married a second time, it appears that they last longer. I don't know, but I mean, no data involved. Does one learn a lesson before they enter another relationship from a divorce, or is it in your mind a pattern anyway?
The numbers I have, and I find this terrifying, and it is in the book, is that 67% of second marriages in the United States specifically, can't speak to other countries, 67% fail. Uh-huh.
Wow.
67% end in divorce.
Wow.
And what I think that indicates, if that's true, you know, I sourced it, but you know, that doesn't make it, I don't know.
Yeah.
I didn't go ask every person. But if there's any validity to that 67% number, I think it suggests strongly that people end their marriages before they've learned the lessons they need to avoid repeating the same mistakes in future relationships. Yeah. I think we have a tendency to believe the other person's responsible for the harm that's being caused.
Wow.
And I advocate this idea of radical personal responsibility.
Matthew, I could talk to you for hours here, and I think everybody else would want to hear you for hours, but we're not allowed to do that by virtue of the law here. So I will highly recommend your book, This Is How Your Marriage Ends, A Hopeful Approach to Saving Relationships. Is there a website people can visit?
My home on the web is Matthew Frey. That's Matthew with 2 T's, MatthewFrey.com. And yeah, everything's there. Thank you so much. I really appreciate your time today.
It's been a real pleasure, and thank you for doing this, and I hope you do more of it. Well, that'll do it for me today. I'll be back again tomorrow with a brand new program, but until that time arrives, well, I wish you peace.